It's the 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. According to the experts at the National Aeronautics and Space Administration, there is still time to mitigate some of the worst effects of climate change. NASA says part of responding to that means approaching it through mitigation, that is, reducing the flow of greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Of course, many efforts are underway to reduce the flow of those gases. Among them is carbon capturing. The idea is pretty much what it sounds like. Capture carbon dioxide emissions before they reach the atmosphere and either reuse them or store them underground. According to the University of Illinois' Prairie Research Institute, our state is ideal for that sort of carbon sequestration. More than a mile below our homes and businesses sits a layer of sandstone. Geologists and others say liquefied CO2 could be pumped into the sandstone. It would be blocked from seeping upwards by the layers of earth above it. But key to carbon sequestration is transmission. Getting the carbon from where it's generated at power plants and other industrial facilities to where it's going to be stored. And that is the main subject of our conversation today, namely two proposed carbon capture pipelines in the works for Illinois. The first would come from Wolf Carbon Solutions and Archer Daniels Midland Company. This project would take carbon captured at ADM's Clinton and Cedar Rapids, Iowa facilities and transport it to its storage site in Decatur. The second one comes from Navigator CO2 Venture. Their Heartland Greenway pipeline would take its liquid carbon dioxide from ethanol and fertilizer plants across several states and transport it to its storage sites in central Illinois. While many experts say it's a useful method to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, many worry about the health risks associated with carbon dioxide if it were to leak from the pipeline. There's also been concerns about storing it underground. Joining us now to talk about these proposed carbon capture pipelines is Pam Richart, co-founder and co-director of the Eco Justice Collaborative and lead organizer of the Coalition to Stop CO2 Pipelines. Pam, welcome to the 21st Show.
Well, thank you, Brian. It's nice to be here with you today.
Also with us is Kathy Campbell, professor emeritus at Southern Illinois University School of Medicine, but more to the point for our conversation, vice president of Citizens Against Heartland Greenway Pipeline. She's also located near the path of the Heartland Greenway Pipeline. Kathy, welcome to the 21st Show to you as well.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
And also with us is Duane Friend, the state master naturalist and a climate change specialist for the University of Illinois Extension. Duane, welcome to the 21st Show to you.
Thanks for the invitation.
Listeners, we should note that we did reach out to Wolf Carbon Solutions, Archer Daniels Midland Company, and Navigator CO2 Venture. Wolf Carbon Solutions and Navigator CO2 declined to be on the program, but they both provided us with statements, which we will read later on. Archer Daniels Midland did not respond to multiple invitations. If you want to join us, it's 800-222-9455. So, Duane Friend, I want to begin with you. Can you just talk a little bit about how carbon capturing works?
Well, it's a lot like what you would do with other types of movement in terms of the pipelines. You take the carbon dioxide essentially at the point of production. In this case, a lot of it's coming from ethanol plants and other types of plants, but the carbon dioxide is pressurized, and it's pressurized at a pretty high level, higher than what would be for other types of, say, natural gas movement. But it's moved through the pipelines, and then it's pumped down into the rock layers. And then usually in these cases, in central Illinois, it's going to be down around anywhere from about 4,000 to 5,000 or 6,000 feet below ground. And as you mentioned before, the idea is it's going to be permanently stored in that type of sandstone. And there are several confining layers of rock above that that would keep the carbon dioxide from migrating upward to higher levels.
So 5,280 feet in a mile. So we're talking about a mile underground, give or take. How low are, that's for storage, how low underground are the pipelines?
For the pipelines themselves, I'm guessing they're going to be anywhere from about 4 to 6 feet below ground. That okay. information I'm not really sure of.
Sure.
I know in a lot of cases with the other types of pipelines for gas and those kind of things, they're usually around 5 to 6 feet below ground in a lot of cases.
Okay. Well, Kathy Richard, I want to bring you into the conversation now. As we mentioned, you live near, or I'm sorry, my name's wrong. My apologies. Kathy Campbell, I want to bring you into the conversation now. You live near the path of the Heartland Greenway pipeline. How did you react when you first heard about this proposal?
I was stunned, actually. I got a package in the mail shortly before Christmas a year ago. And I was amazed because they immediately started talking about condemnation of my land and eminent domain if I refused. And CO2 in high concentrations is toxic. This is a hazardous waste pipeline. This has nothing to do with fuel. And so I started looking at the safety and then the distance from my house. Now, my previous employment was I did auditory research, but I did toxicology of the auditory system and protection from toxicology of the auditory system. I started reading the literature, and quite frankly, it's terrifying. I looked out on what happened in Satartia, Mississippi, where they did have a pipeline rupture. And everyone within a mile, mile and a half was hospitalized. And yet here, they're running it as close as, in fact, they aspire to keep it 1,000 feet away from houses, 1,000 feet. When in Satartia, everyone within a mile, mile and a half was hospitalized. It's ridiculous. That's far too close. And these are huge pipelines. The volume here would be even larger than Satartia. So I think that sometimes when people want to talk about this, it's the magic that, oh, it's captured, and then it magically appears sequestered somewhere. And they don't want to look at the transport. And you're only 5 feet below the ground for, that's what's proposed by Navigator right now. And yet in Satartia, when that rupture occurred, it blew a trench 40 feet deep. Can you imagine the power and the debris field from that? And also it comes out of the ground at sub-zero temperatures, about negative 100. So think about living next to that, not knowing if and when it's going to rupture. And pipelines do rupture. We have over 300 pipeline ruptures a year in the United States. And CO2 pipelines are no exception. It's just that up to now, CO2 pipelines have largely been in unpopulated areas and point to point. The other thing about the Navigator pipeline is this would be the longest, most complicated pipeline in the world. It has more pickup points, on and off ramps. Most of them that are out there right now are short, therefore enhanced oil recovery with a single point. So this is an experiment involving human subjects, and certainly we're not safe.
All right, we need to take a break on the program. We're going to continue this conversation about two proposed pipelines under Illinois for carbon dioxide. So companies say this is an important economic development engine and potential path towards a greener future, but people who live near the pipeline and other environmental organizers are adamantly opposed to this on safety ground as well as climate change grounds. We're talking about all this with Kathy Campbell, who is Vice President of Citizens Against Heartland Greenway Pipeline, Pam Richard, who is with the Eco Justice Collaborative and lead organizer of the Coalition to Stop CO2 Pipelines, and Dwayne Friend, who is a climate change specialist with the University of Illinois Extension. We invited the two companies on. They chose not to join us today. We'll have statements from them after the break. If you want to join us, the number is 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. This is The 21st Show. Stay with us. It's The 21st Show. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just joining us, we're talking about two proposed carbon dioxide pipelines for Illinois. There's the Heartland Greenway pipeline, which would take liquid carbon dioxide from ethanol and fertilizer plants across several states, transported to storage sites in central Illinois. Also, Woof Carbon Solutions and ADM would take carbon from ADM's Clinton and Cedar Rapids, Iowa facilities and transport it to its storage site in Decatur. We are talking about this with Pam Richert, co-founder and co-director of the EcoJustice Collaborative and lead organizer of the Coalition to Stop CO2 Pipelines, Kathy Campbell, who's vice president of Citizens Against Heartland Greenway Pipeline and lives near the proposed path of that, and also Dwayne Friend, the state master naturalist and a climate change specialist at the University of Illinois Extension. We invited ADM and Wolf Carbon Solutions and Navigator CO2 Venture on our program today. ADM never responded. Wolf and Navigator sent statements. Navigator says, in part, Navigator has and continues to work closely and collaboratively with landowners, community leaders, interested stakeholders, and others to put forward infrastructure that is safe, reliable, and value-added to the development of rural America. We recognize the important and distinct roles of federal agencies on safety, state regulators on siting, and county boards on local permits. We look forward to meeting and in many cases exceeding regulations to ensure the Heartland Greenway is built safely, the right way, and to last. Carbon capture, utilization, and storage technology will provide continued market demand and growth for ethanol and other critical rural manufacturers. This technology offers a clear path forward to the future of the biofuels industry while also providing the long-term economic certainty Midwest communities deserve. Pam Richert, what do you think about that statement?
Well, I've been hearing that for the last 9 months as we've been working with local communities along Navigator's route. And I should say that ADM Wolf, Wolf Carbon Solutions ADM, has not yet filed their application with the Illinois Commerce Commission, and we have very sketchy information about their proposal. But what I can say is this: CO2 captured from ethanol plants represents less than 1% of total U.S. emissions. And that makes this practice, in my view, an ineffective climate solution, and one that brings with it, as Kathy just shared, the hazards of CO2 pipelines. And I think others along the route of Navigator's pipeline would agree with us. To date, at least as of January, they had been able to secure easements from just 6% of the landowners that they'd been contacting. So that's not saying people are accepting this in an overwhelmingly way. And the thing that I think I really want to emphasize here today, other than we can talk more about how it plays into the larger climate scheme, and I hope we have time to do that, but there are loopholes in federal safety regulations, and that leaves these pipelines largely unregulated. And I'm gonna give you some examples. They're more prone to running ductal fractures and oil and gas. So in other words, if there's a leak, it can quickly become a rupture, the pipeline zips, and it can release large volumes of CO2, which, as Kathy just shared, is an asphyxiant. So we need federal government standards to prescribe those design methods to prevent and arrest the fracture propagation. They don't exist. And right now, the developer can kind of choose what they consider to be best practices. PHMSA, the Pipeline Hazardous Material Safety Administration, also needs to regulate the maximum allowable concentrations of impurities. Impurities like water can corrode a steel pipe. It forms carbonic acid, and therefore, if it corrodes the pipe, it can lead to a leak, it can lead to a rupture, as I've just described. And this one, I think, is really interesting, too. Right now, PHMSA does not regulate CO2 transported as a gas or a liquid. And Navigator's pipeline would be largely transporting CO2 as a liquid. The Pipeline Hazardous Material and Safety Administration does regulate supercritical CO2, which is kind of a hybrid. It's got properties of both a liquid and a gas. But Navigator has shared with us, and we've seen this in their application to the Illinois Commerce Commission, that they will have it'll be supercritical at the beginning point and at the end point, and probably at some booster stations in between. In the meantime, it's going to be liquid. Does that matter? Well, one day a company could challenge a fine by the federal government by arguing the agency lacks the regulatory authority because the carbon dioxide pipeline in question was not in a supercritical state and it doesn't really regulate liquid CO2 pipelines. And then lastly, I'm going to say one more thing. The thing that I think is also extremely important is that the federal government really needs to do more research and work on computer modeling that can actually predict what a CO2 plume release would do. It was true in Satartia that they did that computer modeling, but they didn't take into account a whole variety of factors like topography and weather, for example. And that plume traveled 1.25 miles into the town of Satartia. So these are things that I think that the federal government is looking to do. They have adopted a rulemaking process to do just that. And yet the developers here in Illinois, Navigator, Wolf ADM, are proceeding before those new regulations and standards are in place.
I want to turn now to some of this. One of the environmental points we've been talking about is to whether this is, you know, a step on the way to a greener future. And we've got a caller on the line, John from Springfield. I'm going to get to you in just a moment, a text. But first, I want to read a statement, another statement. This is from Wolf Carbon Solutions. Vice President of Corporate Development there, Nip Noppinger, said, "The Mount Simon Hub is a world-class carbon capture and storage system that will position Iowa at the forefront of industrial decarbonization efforts, helping to achieve regional, national, and global carbon reduction goals. Most immediately, this project will bolster Iowa's agricultural industry and position ethanol as the premier alternative fuel." Tom in Washington, Illinois, sent us a text message saying carbon capturing is not a proven technology. And are there any examples where this is used successfully? And then says, "This is about as stupid as producing ethanol from food crops." So that's Tom's perspective. And now I want to bring John calling in from Springfield on line 4. John, thanks for calling in. I think you wanted to make a point about ethanol as well.
Yes, I do. Thank you. Well, back around 2000, the National Academy of Sciences Transportation Research Board looked at the future for transportation. And the research concluded that ethanol is not a cost-effective biofuel and that we should be looking at other biofuels and not produce ethanol. And along the lines of fertilizer, Western Illinois University has done a lot of research and found that with sustainable agriculture and what's now called regenerative agriculture, that we can produce crops without fertilizer. So I guess my point is, why don't we look at the problem of not transporting this, but not creating it in the first place?
All right, John, thank you so much for calling in. I'm going to put that question to our guests. And Duane Friend, I'm going to bring you back into the conversation. There was a lot there, I know, to respond to. So if you want to respond to anything the caller said or just in a more general way, I'll start with that. What do you think about that?
Well, agriculture in general can be seen as an area where we can do some carbon sequestration. Part of this, yeah, and this whole idea of putting this into the ground and storing it there permanently, like was mentioned before, it's one option, but is it going to take care of the situation entirely? No. Agriculture in general, though, can do and is doing more in terms of carbon sequestration by storing carbon in soil. And just like the caller just mentioned, the idea of regenerative agriculture, of less tillage, cover crops, those types of things, is showing that it can store more carbon in the soil directly in forms of increased organic matter. Now, the issue with that is, compared to the pipeline situation, is the pipeline situation, it's permanently stored. It's going to be there for eons. With soil, anytime that soil is disturbed, a lot of that organic matter is going to go back up in the air as carbon dioxide. So it's looking at, you know, situations where it can be stored for maybe if the ground is not tilled extensively, maybe storing it for decades, or if possible, maybe hundreds of years, as opposed to having that stored permanently. So, you know, there are options out there. One other thing, and I don't know how much time we have left, that I would mention, that for any landowner that is even considering doing this, one of the things that I talk to landowners about is a lot of our fields these days have tile lines. And for those that may not know what that is, these are perforated pieces of pipe that are about 3 feet down that help dry out soils in the spring and in the fall so farmers can get on the fields and do their farming. Any pipeline that's going to go through these fields is going to tear up those tile lines. So, and I know in a lot of contracts, they have stipulations that they will come in and repair those tile lines. Landowners really need to look at those contracts very closely because even afterwards, there's probably going to be some settling involved of the ground. So they need to make sure that if they do decide to do this, they have something in that contract that says that they will get paid for repairing or the need to repair those tile lines for several years after that construction has taken place.
Well, just a few minutes left in our conversation, and I do want to make time and space for Kathy Campbell to ask you about this question of this being a, you know, a step, a necessary step on the way to a greener future. What's your perspective on that?
Oh, I think that the alternatives are clear for alternative energy. We need to look more at exactly what Dwayne was talking about for regenerative farming. But there are far better ways to handle this. Wind and solar are really the way to go. They're far more effective than this method without disrupting the farmland. Also, you look at it, our farmers are sending us pictures of places where they have had pipelines in for 50 years and that land has never recovered. The tile lines that Dwayne was talking about, Navigator is insisting that they cannot put tile lines under the pipelines themselves. They have to run parallel to the pipelines. That's going to permanently reduce crop productivity. So that is a damage because the crops themselves are taking CO2 out of the environment. But when we're damaging the prime farmland and the food supply for the world here, I don't see how that is environmentally friendly at all.
And Pam Richard, your perspective on this? We've only got about a minute left, maybe.
I'm a big fan of regenerative agriculture, and I honestly think we ought to be paying the farmer to be able to transition from conventional farming, which uses nitrogen inputs that actually release a potent greenhouse gas, nitrous oxide, that's 300 times that of CO2. So we could do a lot with that piece. I think. And then lastly, I would say, if you look at what the IPCC has said about carbon capture and sequestration, it is listed as the last resort, the least costly, a lot of unknowns about it. And the things that always come up on top are renewable energy resources, hydropower, solar, wind, as we've discussed, and biological sequestration, converting our land uses to be able to capture more carbon. And that does include the regenerative agricultural piece. There's a whole lot more that we can do here. So to put all the eggs in the basket, as we are doing with Navigator and ADM, capturing ethanol, which really doesn't contribute much in the overall scheme of emissions in the US, is the wrong direction. That's really what I think.
Pamela Richard with the Echo Justice Collaborative, Kathleen Campbell with the Citizens Against Heartland Greenway Pipeline, and Dwayne Friend is with the University of Illinois Extension. Pam, Kathy, Dwayne, thank you so much for being with us today on the 21st show.
Thank you.
And that is all the time we have for our program today. Coming up tomorrow, Denise Winfrey has been on the Will County Board since 2009. This year, she's also serving as the president of a national organization for county elected officials. We'll talk with her about this often overlooked level of government. That's tomorrow on the 21st show. You can stay up to date with us on our website, 21stshow.org. You can also let us know what you thought about the program. All the ways to contact us are there, our email address, our voicemail number, which you can call 24/7, as well as links to our podcast. You can also find us on Spotify and Apple. Just search for The 21st Show. The 21st Show is produced by Christine Hatfield and Jose Zepeda. Our interns are Owen Henderson and Anaya Jones. Technical direction and engineering comes from Jason Croft and Steve Mork. Reginald Hardwick is our news director. Thank you to the band Public Access for our theme music. The 21st Show is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening. We'll talk with you again tomorrow.